O'Clock.
Die Tribüne erhebt sich und der Anne in Linz bebt ein erstes Mal. Linz schlägt zu! Das ist unglaublich, was die Black Wings hier zelebrieren!
Flying High, ein Unibet Hockey O'Clock Spezial.
We're on the home stretch of Flying High. It is episode number 7 that's being recorded right now. And this is the episode I've been very much looking forward to for a very long time because it's with none other than the championship winning goaltender, Alex Weston. And Alex, so thankful that you're taking the time reminiscing a little bit in that incredible 11-12 Linz campaign.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for reaching out. And I've listened to listened to Rob's episode, Murph's episode, and Patty's episode. And it's been really fun to kind of hear the different perspectives and kind of looking back on it. So thanks for doing this. This is awesome.
Thank you so much. Much appreciated. And obviously rave reviews incoming from the fans. We're not the only ones that are reminiscing in something that happened a full decade ago. When you think about that season, and I've asked that question other interviewees before, but when you personally think about 11-12, that one campaign, what's the first memory that comes to mind?
The first memory is probably just the clinching game, just kind of the way that season culminated, and to finish that on home ice. And I thought Murph did an awesome job of just kind of explaining how special that is to win it on home ice. You know, even in the NHL every year, you know, as hockey fans, we all watch the Stanley Cup, and it's incredible how many times they win it on road ice. And obviously championships are special no matter what. But I'd say that's my first kind of immediate memory when I think about that championship.
When talking about the season, I thought with you, I want to back it up a little bit because just the other day in the local league, the record for the longest final game was finally, no pun intended, broken. The previous record stood at 82 minutes and 27 seconds in game 6 of the 09-10 finals. That goal that was scored by Doug Lynch on that day, that was conceded by you, that gave the title to Red Bull Salzburg. How did that one feel as far as you could still remember, knowing that the puck's in the net, knowing that the season is over, knowing that the other team just won a championship?
I mean, crushing is the only word that comes to mind. Like, I remember it well. Like, it wasn't a great goal by me, by any stretch. It was, I feel like the puck was on end or on edge as he released it, and it just sort of froze me. And obviously goes in, and you just kind of have that moment of, I mean, it feels like a car crash. Like, everything just kind of slows down and gets really quiet for a second. And then you're just like, okay, it's over. You know, that was a tough series because I think we felt, you know, it at 2-0, we obviously felt in pretty good control. And at the end of game 2, and I might be mistaken on this, I feel like they scored a couple late goals. It was a kind of lopsided game 2, but they scored a couple late goals. I don't know if it was 7-5 or 7-3. I don't remember what the score was, but they scored a couple late ones, and it just felt like there was a little bit of a momentum shift there, even though we won the game. And then they came out early in game 3 and got a couple quick ones, and it was, I feel like it really changed the complexion of that series. And then we just weren't able to wrestle it back. But that last goal, like, those are tough to give up, right? Like, those are just part of playoffs and part of, you know, there's a lot of highs and there's a lot of lows, and that was certainly a pretty low.
And the memory is still really good. Game 2 was a 6-4 win in Linz, and Salzburg scored one at the 45 minute mark, the 46 minute mark, and the 55 minute mark. So yeah, Three goals in the last period that obviously kind of set a tone. The interesting thing is we're talking about things that happened a decade ago. Now, goalies are always being taught, like, short memory, forget about everything, focus on the next puck. But how long do these memories really, really, really stick with you? How vividly do you especially remember everything that went on in the Able League, as it was called at that time?
I mean, I think it's just snippets, right? Like, obviously that goal against Lynch, I remember for whatever reason, clearly, probably because of the emotion tied to it. you know, I think it's just kind of moments, and that's what sort of escalates it in your mind. You know, when I look back at sort of my time just in the league as a whole, like, you know, we loved it over there. Even from, you know, that first year in Ljubljana, was a great experience for my wife and I, and obviously a very interesting season. And then the time in Linz there was, we just have a lot of great memories from that time.
If we're talking about your Linz time, we probably have to tackle the topic of quote unquote stability in your playing career and where you're living. If one just looks at all the clubs that you played for before, Khabarovsk, Yaroslavl, which is no short trip, Trenton, Charlotte, back to Russia, the second league, Hartford, Charlotte, Ljubljana, and then Linz. And that should be at, or probably the second half of your career, the place where you had your longest tenure. Was that something that you were specifically looking for? Having stability, wanting a club to play for a couple of years, not only a year or two?
For sure. And I think part of that, you know, the early parts of your career, I think you're constantly looking, thinking about contracts, thinking about, okay, well, this is where I'm at this year. If I play well, maybe I can get, you know, called up to the American League, or maybe I can get an AHL contract, you know? And so like, you're constantly sort of looking to push forward. At that point in my career, getting to Linz, I think for the person I was, for the goalie I was, for my age, everything else, like I think the stability aspect was really desirable. And it was the first time in my career I found a place I really wanted to stay. There was something about kind of the vibe of the city, the fans, the size of the city. You know, my wife and I aren't big city people, but I thought just the overall atmosphere around Linz just felt really great to us. It was really comfortable. So I think once we got there, you know, it became pretty clear that we wanted to stay there as long as we could.
I was still in the 08-09 season, and I've mentioned a couple of cities and a couple of countries that you were before. So Austria, even though you had played in the league with Ljubljana, still being in Austria, living in Austria, a little different than in Slovenia. What was the first, now looking back on it, uniquely Upper Austrian or uniquely Linz experience?
It's a great question. I don't know if it's a specific kind of Upper Austrian or Linz experience, or I guess, sorry, it would be a Linz experience, but I think there's something about kind of the old town and the Hochplatz area that it just, I don't know, it just feels, and maybe it's just the North American perspective, but you get in these kind of little, I don't want to say little, but you get in these kind of city centers that you can walk around. It just has such an awesome historical sort of vibe to it. So I think that really affected us. Like that first day we went up, we went up at the end of the season, the end of that Ljubljana season, we went up, my wife and I went up for a night or two. Met Perthaler, did a press conference, and just sort of like went out to dinner and walked around the city. And it was just like that moment was just like we're going to be here for the next 2 years at least. And that was really, really exciting.
And really it came to pass, and a couple more years on top of that. After having lost the finals in 09 and 10 in such heartbreaking fashion against Salzburg, was it not obvious, but was there the danger of having a finals hangover? To a certain degree, there's a championship hangover for a lot of teams. But if you look at Stanley Cup losing teams, if you look at Super Bowl losing teams, they apparently are doing much worse the season after than during their finals run. Was that the case in 10-11 for Linz?
I think one of the things I heard Tom Brady recently, you know, and obviously he's the greatest ever. And he was describing the challenge of repeating, and he put it in such a better way. I think when you have a success or you get close to that point, that next year coming back and you're like pushing hard to take that step forward. But I think a lot of times teams, trip themselves up by trying to recreate, you know, most of the success or what they achieved the year before, and then they're just trying to maximize and like keep pushing forward. The way he put it was, we're not defending our championship. Like, we're just trying to win another championship. So I think, and I love that mentality, because I don't spend a ton of time looking back, or I try not to. And I think that understanding that the group, the dynamics, how this team wins this current year is going to be different from whatever success we had in the past. Like, yes, are we still similar players? Are we, you know, are we, if you're a power play guy, are you still going to try to get your points on the power play and maximize that? Yes. Like, so there are similarities, but I think as an athlete, you have to understand that the challenges are different, and the way it works out is going to be different. So if you spend your energy trying to recreate something that has already happened, I think that's where teams can trip themselves up. I don't know if I'm explaining that well, but that's my feeling. So I feel like that year, it was like, well, we had so much success the prior year. Like, why isn't it happening? So we kept looking back, trying to capture something that happened the year prior. And ultimately that team, obviously we didn't recapture that success and we didn't move forward. And it was obviously a disappointing year.
Not really looking back on exactly what happened from season to season, but is there a point during the off season where you personally try to push a reset button, or where you try to get that fresh start that probably every player needs before a season, or is that just the first day of training camp?
I think it just happens naturally with the, you know, we get a full three and a half, four months off. Like, I think you just naturally sort of, I think the time kind of does that, helps that reset. Like, my off seasons were pretty boring. I get, you know, everyone takes obviously a little time off. I get very antsy very quickly. So might take a couple of days, and then I just want to start kind of moving again, feel like I'm preparing, not like I'm crushing at the gym or anything, but just like trying to stay active, trying to, you know, better my shape, yoga, whatever. But I need to sort of stay active. And that became pretty obvious, late in my career, especially that's just kind of my off season routine. And then after about a month and a half before training camp, I would start to get back on the ice, work with, the goalies I would work with in Boston in the off season there. So my summer routines were always pretty similar. But I think that reset, you know, obviously, some years it takes a little longer to, you know, like the year we lost in the finals there, it probably took a little longer to sort of just mentally kind of clear the space, but we have plenty of time to do that. Like, that's not much of a concern. If you're still upset 4 months later, that's still lingering. I mean, you need to find a better way to deal with those heartbreaks.
And there were a couple of heartbreaks. Obviously, the Ljubljana series against Salzburg that has gone down in history for very unfortunate things. Then an early quote-unquote playoff exit the year after, another finals run, another early playoff exit. Is it just a game of hockey, these highs and lows, or were there specific reasons each and every year that it just turned out the way it was?
Yeah, I mean, back to what I was saying before, I think every year is different. So I think you know, that year in Ljubljana, you know, I feel very fortunate. I was able to go to three finals in the six seasons I was over there, and they were all different runs. Like Ljubljana, you know, we loved it there, but organizationally it had its challenges. Obviously, I think that's pretty well documented. You know, and even as a team, I feel like we were just a group of, guys trying to hang on in the league, or guys trying to break into the league. So I don't think the expectations were very high. And I think we just sort of caught lightning in a bottle a little bit and got hot at the right time. And to be part of that in a city, and just like, you kind of ride that sort of success. And obviously Todd Ellick was hands down the biggest part of that. Such an amazing player, such a unique character, but such an amazing player. And the effect he had on our group was immeasurable. So I think you kind of ride that, and then you get, you know, we have two great series, beating Klagenfurt, beating Linz, and then we go up against Salzburg and feel like you have it. And then I think the two biggest things were obviously the forfeiting, leaving Ljubljana, going to Salzburg, thinking you're up 3-1, and then an hour before the game, finding out that it's actually 2-2. I think that was a a tough one mentally. And then for me personally, just getting hurt in game four there was it's just the way it goes sometimes. So I think that was kind of that run. And then that year in Linz, it was, I think we felt like we had a good team going in, but I want to say we were the four seed maybe. Like we had had a couple chances during that year, I think, to sort of like push up into that top two, top three. And every time we would push close, we'd lose a couple games and sort of drop back into four. So I certainly wouldn't call us kind of the favorites going in. But then, you know, once you get in, I thought we definitely had a good team and we could definitely compete with those teams. Like it didn't feel like we were doing anything above us. So you kind of go on that run and it ends the way it ends. And then, you know, obviously the third crack at it, the year we won it, that had just a much different vibe because we had had success all year long. We had had a good, stable group all year long. And, you know, you just kind of keep pushing.
Or it's interesting that you mentioned the different vibe that this 11-12 group had. It's your fourth year already in Linz. Not that the team has been torn down in its entirety. There were some mainstays and some people that were brought back, but a lot of new faces, a new coach. Obviously, you as one of the veteran players still on the team. At what point during that summer or maybe during that fall did you personally think this group indeed has a different vibe to it?
Certainly not in the summer. Like obviously you knew there were changes, you know, from the top on down. So I think you're coming back. And one of the things, like, so as much as we all like stability, so what we were talking about that, you know, knowing I was going to be in Linz or wanting to be in Linz and that stability is a great feeling. A lot of times as athletes, that also, that comfort can be a negative. You know, not that you intentionally mean for it to happen that way, but, you know, the infusion of a new dynamic sometimes is needed. And I think with that group, prior to the championship, I feel like that group had been together long enough. We had had some success. We weren't able to kind of bring it as far as we wanted to. And those are tough decisions by management, right? Like that's, but you got to give them a lot of credit for making those hard decisions. And that's sports. And so I think coming in, we all were expecting some changes. We all were expecting, you know, kind of a different vibe, but to say we knew what that was going to be in the summer, like that's not, I think once you get around it and, you know, the season sort of takes on a characteristic of its own. Right. And so I think once you get together, once you start working together, once you, feel things moving in the right direction, like that's when it takes on its character.
Now you as a goaltender, you're of course dependent on yourself, but also dependent on the people playing in front of you. With all the people, with all the new defensemen, forwards that were brought in, are you the one who does a little bit of his own research, just trying to find out, is this a defenseman who's a stay-at-home defender who likes to block shots? Or, oh my, they brought another offensive defenseman in and I'm going to be in even more trouble than I already was last year.
No, I think it's more about, you know, as soon as you hear a name like, hey, you know, we'd see the Leahys a lot in the summer. We were living in Boston in the off season. And so like, you know, we'd have a text there going to be like, oh, hey, do you see we signed Danny Ehrman? So go to Elite Prospects right away, look up Danny Ehrman, see if there's anyone you played with that played with him, try to do like, just what's he like as a guy? Well, just so you do kind of quick stuff like that. You know, and maybe if there's a connection, you reach out, say, you know, hey, welcome to the team, that type of stuff. But no, I think you just kind of do a quick search like that. And then, you know, you trust the people who signed him, that they know what they're doing.
With all the incoming players and maybe even some that you already looked up, who left the first lasting impression on you?
I mean, obviously signing Murph was huge. I mean, getting someone from the Swiss A, you know, obviously at a different point in his career, but I think his track record was really far and away above the best sort of career of someone that we would have brought in. So I think signing him felt like a huge step in the right direction. I think a very underrated signing. So I played with Mike Ouellette his rookie year in Charlotte. And I knew how good a player he was, low maintenance, good in all areas. So I feel like that signing was a little sort of under the radar compared to maybe some of the other ones, but I was very confident that he was going to have an awesome impact on our group. So, I mean, those two alone, you know, I didn't know much about Erms. I didn't know anything about Wiedemann. Those two signings alone, I didn't know anything about Heisey. So those two signings for me, it was like, okay, well, if the other guys are as good, you know, it's like, I feel like it's a good group coming in. So it's exciting. Like, as a player, like, that's what you want to see. Like, that's exciting, right? Like, if you're, you know, if they had signed a guy I played with that I didn't think as highly of, it would be like, oh, okay, here we go. But, you know, I think they did an awesome job with the guys that they brought in.
And the good thing is, you as a goaltender, you get a very good first impression on the ice immediately. And it's the same question that I asked Martin Majerich on the last episode of Flying High. I wanted to know who kind of rose his or made his eyebrows go up. And he immediately said Danny Erman. And now you facing most of the guys in practice every day, facing a ton of shots. Who caught your attention?
Let's see. I mean, Heisey obviously has skill that not a lot of players have. So a lot of that, at times it can be very effective, at times it can be very frustrating, but like, he has that, like, that jumps off the page right away. The thing I grew to really love and appreciate about Danny Erman, I think his personality was really important for our kind of team dynamic. And, you know, the years prior in Lynn, so that group was a very, very close-knit group. And there wasn't a lot of, you know, everybody got along. There wasn't any friction that I can remember. You know, not that something doesn't happen in practice or guys could heat a little bit, but like, there wasn't any like real friction. And Danny comes in as a personality. You know, we're all sports fans and we'll be talking about something that's going on in the NFL. And Danny has a way of driving these debates, and he might take a ridiculous stance on it, but it just drives that sort of energy. And when I say friction, I mean it in a good way. But I feel like Danny was a player for us that provided that, like, gave our locker room a little bit of edge at times. And I think it's important. The more I'm around it, like, I think you need it. Like, you can't, you know, it can't be all rainbows and sunshine all the time. Like, it's, you need some of that bite, to push a group forward. And I thought he brought that, and it was kind of evident from day one. Very inclusive and just good energy. And the way he and Veeds would sort of play off each other, like, it was just comical. But it was fantastic for our group, and I think it was needed.
Your favorite, probably funniest episode with Danny Erman. And I hope it's okay to tell it on a pod, and obviously young people are listening to it as well. If it's not, we can postpone it to a little later in the day.
I feel like there's always comedy surrounding Danny. I don't know. Are you referring to something specific?
Anything that comes to your head first.
I don't have like a one, I don't have a one-off Danny Erman story.
But the good thing is I'm going to ask him myself, because each and every person that I've talked to so far refers to his great sense of humor and a couple of things that I should specifically ask him, which I'm going to do next episode here on Flying High. But sticking with you, and we're still kind of close to training camp and getting ready to the season. And if you just look at everything that had gone on the years prior, you played a ton in the regular season. You had long playoff runs. Did you have a certain routine during the off season to get your body ready again? Or did you adjust specifically after each and every season, depending on how long the playoff run was, how intense the playoff run was? Was 11-12 any different in terms of getting ready for the season to the years prior?
Pretty standard off season. I mean, I was very, very fortunate through my career to avoid, you know, big injuries. Looking back, if that Salzburg Ljubljana 1 injury, if that had happened in the middle of the season, I would have missed a good good chunk of the season, but I feel like over the course of my career, I was fortunate, and that's, I don't know, that's a lot of just dumb luck. So I really very seldom had to alter kind of my routines in the summer. So it was just, you know, rinse and repeat, just try to get better and try to work on my goalie stuff in the summer and just try to show up in camp in good shape and ready to play as much hockey as I could.
Obviously a little bit of a setup, because a lot of people also told me that Rob Dahm was specifically looking for roles for certain people and told them about their role on the team specifically. Now you, coming off of the year prior to Rob Dahm's arrival as the clear-cut number one goaltender, heading into the season as the clear-cut number one goaltender, was that the expectation that you had to play most of the games, or did it try to bring in some competition?
The way I remember, Rob is, obviously I have a pretty complicated history with Rob, but there's, he's very straightforward. He's just like, give us good goaltending. Like, he's like, I know what it looks like when it's good. And
easier
I know what it looks
said
like
than done.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's very cut and dry. So I knew what the job was. I knew what my expectations were. And you just work and try to be ready and fulfill them. So it was very, very direct. And I think listening to him talk about the way that team was constructed and going through it, comparing it a little bit right now to our current situation here in Hershey, and with between injuries and call-ups, kind of your rosters fluctuate quite a bit. I thought that when I look back at that team in Linz, everyone was slotted in a way that was going to help the group. And now I'm sure some players wanted more ice time here or wanted a better chance there. But a lot of time, you know, players always want that. They should want that, right? Because it's their career and they're trying to maximize everything they can out of their bodies, out of their time that, you know, we're allowed to play this game. But when I look back at that year, I think everyone was just exactly where they needed to be. And that's not easy. And there are things that can come up, you know, some foreseen and some unforeseen. You know, somebody gets hurt and they're out for the season. That's the way it goes. Someone's got to figure out a way to punch above their weight, if that makes sense, or play up in the lineup. And I feel like for that year, we were very balanced and guys were where they needed to be. I think that was a big part of the success of that team.
Now, as Rob Dahm wanted you to provide the team with good goaltending, was there ever a point during the regular season where you thought, well, I'm doing just that. I'm giving them good goaltending.
I mean, I think throughout the year, I think one of the hardest things in sports is to be consistent. And I think up and down our lineup, and I thought the two losses in a row stat that you had in Rob's episode, you know, that speaks volumes about the group, and it speaks volumes as to, that shows that everyone's doing their job most nights, most consistently. So I think that year, it not that it wasn't without hiccups, not that there wasn't, bad days of practice, things like that. Like it's not all smooth sailing, but I thought for the most part, we were consistently moving in the right direction. And one of the things I really enjoyed about Rob, I enjoyed his practices. And I thought he was very measured when we were having a bad day. He very seldom would sort of lose it. And at the end of practice, he would just sort of quietly say, like, we weren't very good today. Go enjoy your day, figure out a way to get better, like be better tomorrow. And I thought it was very direct. And I thought it was very, like, and we all knew it. Like there was no hiding from it. And you just kind of nod your head like, yeah, we were garbage today in practice. Like we got to get better. And I thought the way the group responded to that and the way the group held each other accountable and all those things that go into good teams, I thought we had that.
It's been mentioned a couple of times before in the pod how different Rob Dahm's system was for players that came in, for players that were here. Did anything change for you playing in the net with Rob Dahm, or was it business as usual for yourself?
Mostly it was business as usual. The only real thing he changed for us, and it was the first time a coach had ever done this, he gave my puck handling some structure, and it really, really helped me as a puck handler because I'm garbage at it to begin with. Like, maybe I can get out there, stop it, hopefully move it to somebody. But like, by and large, like it just wasn't a skill for me. And he came in and provided just kind of more structure. Like the D knew their routes, certain situations. So now all of a sudden, instead of going back and just trying to figure out where everyone was, where the forecheckers were, now there was a little more pattern to it where I knew or I expected, you know, the first D-man back to be here, the second D-man back to be there, like depending on where the pressure was. So like it gave me a little bit of structure in that situation. I would say in terms of, you know, neutral zone forechecks and forechecks and coming into D-zone coverage, things like that, it didn't really change a whole lot in terms of my job. Now I might, you know, if everyone's doing their job well, maybe I'm getting more shots from a certain spot on the ice, but by and large, I feel like my job is to be ready. I think the goalie's biggest job is to be ready when those things break down. So as much as you can put stock into a system, it's my job to figure out how to stop the puck when that system doesn't work or fails. So I don't think it changed much from the goalie side, if that makes sense.
Looking for consistency. Every team does it, only a very few or very few teams do get to this consistency. And Linz, obviously, one of the teams that did it in this 11-12 year. Was there ever a point where you thought, this is what we've been looking for a couple of years now? This is like really happening.
I wouldn't say that. Like it felt good. Like it felt, you know, again, a little bit short-sighted. Like I don't think, you know, as much as I don't look back very often, I try not to look too far ahead either. So I think it's just like, okay, who are we playing this week? We got an away game on Tuesday. We're home Friday. We're away Sunday. Like you just kind of break it up into little chunks, or at least I did. So for the regular season, it's just kind of, you just kind of keep pushing. And then, you know, every now and then you're not stupid. Like you're looking at the standings, you're seeing how other teams are doing, who's playing well, who's not playing well, who looks dangerous. So you're just kind of trying to stay focused at the task at hand and not get too far ahead of yourselves. And I think, you know, generally when athletes do get distracted by something that's either happened in the past or looking too far ahead in the future, that's generally when things go south. So I think the challenge is to just stay in the moment, as cliche as that is.
And set consistency obviously started in the net as well. You played a ton of games, but then at the back end of the regular season, and that's what also the statisticians over at Unibet found out, Lorenz Hirn got 3 out of it, his eventually 6 starts in games 36 to 43. And you missed one game prior to that due to sickness. That was game 19 of the year. But was that a welcome breather? Was that something? And you led the standings throughout the year, but at the tail end of the first quote-unquote phase of the regular season, was it something that you needed that eventually helped you regain some stamina for and hopefully long playoff run?
Yeah. I don't remember the situation as to why Larry played so much kind of in that stretch. Like, you know, he showed up, he was an awesome partner. He showed up, he worked so hard every day. And he was really fun to be partners with. So I don't remember the situation around that. The one thing I will say to your question, when you get to a point where like you're playing and playing and playing, I always found like when all of a sudden I'm on the bench for a game or two or whatever for whatever reason, whether it's bad play, whether it doesn't matter, sometimes that shift in perspective is really, really good. Cause I think a lot of times when watching video is fascinating, cause a lot of times things happen exactly how you remember them. And then sometimes you're like, oh, I didn't realize that guy was that far away or was that close. Or sometimes like when our brain is picking up and processing these things at speed, the details are different, right, than what they actually are. So I think a lot of times when you get to sit on the bench for a game, you see plays differently. Like you see D-men react differently in different situations. You're like, oh, I always kind of picture it this way. Like, oh, they're under a lot more heat than I expect. So I think that change of perspective is really, really important. And it's a great little way to sort of kind of give your mind an in-season reset. So I think there's a lot of value there. So, I mean, hopefully that was my mindset in these games. And hopefully that's the way I approach it. I don't remember needing a break, or I don't remember, you know, I don't remember the details around it, but I hope that's what I did with with those games. Yeah.
You most definitely did, and no one can blame you for missing out on things. We're still talking about stuff that happened 10 years ago, and memory sometimes plays tricks on us. Someone who doesn't play a trick on us, but someone who's provided me with a little bit of insights about that year and yourself is, of course, Rob Daum. He sent me this. Want to listen to you or with you to this? And then we're going to talk about it.
Alec Weston, our goaltender, you cannot win a championship without top flight goaltending. And as goalies go, Alex was probably the most normal person as a goaltender I've ever come across. And because of his attitude and his work ethic and his professionalism, the team rallied around him. They were always looking to block shots. They always gave a little bit extra defensively because of the demeanor that Alex had. You know, he was very, again, he was team first. He was very humble. He wasn't somebody that was, as goalies can be, they can be strange at times. And I can understand that with people shooting pucks at you all night long, but Alex wasn't that way at all. He was a real solid teammate. He never blamed anybody for anything that went wrong. If a defenseman made a mistake, Alex was always just calm about it and didn't let it bother him. And in turn, it didn't bother the team at all. And if a bad goal went in, it didn't bother Alex. He just came back and the next shift and made sure that the second one didn't go in. And because of his, again, because of that demeanor that he had and that professionalism and the positive personality that he was, the guys just would kill in front of him to do whatever they could to make his life easier. And you know, he was a huge part as a goalie, giving us the type of goaltending that we needed to be a championship team, and you cannot win without it. And Alex gave it to us. So he was a big part of the success that we had.
I'd label this a loaded statement. First of all, he called you the most normal goaltender that he ever came across. So what makes you more normal than other goaltenders?
That's a good question. I mean, first of all, it's very humbling hearing him say that. It's obviously a lot of nice stuff. I think I focus very, very hard on the demeanor aspect of it. Like, I always wanted to be seen as a calm presence, whether things were going well or badly. Like, again, going back to that consistency, I wanted that. Again, I think it worked and was very conscious of sort of, I guess, my outward demeanor. And for him to say, you know, bad goal goes in, it doesn't bother me. That part's not true. I'm glad it looked like it maybe didn't bother me. But I think that's the goalie's job. Again, like when things break down, when things get scrambled, when teams, whether it's emotionally, whether it's physically, when things go sideways, the goalie's job is to make sure at least that back end kind of stays on the rails and you give your team enough time to recover in whatever way they need to. So I think that's something I was conscious of. Every day I played, like that was something I really, really worked hard to provide. And I'm sure some nights I wasn't very good at hiding my emotions, but I think for the most part, you know, if that was the effect on the team, then that's exactly what I was hoping for. In terms of the blocking shots and that sort of stuff, that says more about the character of that group individually and collectively, and things like that, you know, I appreciate the sentiment that like the guys are working for, you know, me as the goalie. I think it's one of those things that bring on a life of their own. So like a guy watches Patty Leahy, you know, block three shots in a shift. Well, that guy can't go out and just sort of give a half-ass effort, right? So I think things like, and this is what good teams do, good habits build good habits. And it starts with one person, and then all of a sudden it's three guys doing everything they can to block a shot or get a puck out of the blue line, whatever the kind of little skill that might go unnoticed. But it's part of winning hockey. It's what you need to do to win. And I felt like that group as a whole constantly kind of fed off each other's good plays. And then that just, again, drives the group forward, drives the group to be better. So by the end, you know, it might not all happen in September or October or November, but when you're building those good habits through those months, you're going to be in a pretty good place in February. And I think that's what happened there.
This mutual understanding, I got your backs, if you've got mine, is that something, and if you're blocking shots, that helps me, and I'm trying to do the rest, is that something that's been talked about in team meetings, or is it just unspoken and everybody knows, okay, everybody needs to do this to have championship winning hockey?
That's a good question. I got to think something to that effect. You know, I think that's a very, you know, I just remind teams and groups of that throughout the year. I don't remember Rob specifically talking about it, but I wouldn't be surprised in the least if he did. And I wouldn't be surprised in the least if it's something that the group talked about. You know, in between periods, someone like Patty Leahy would have like five ice bags on his body and somebody, you know, hey, nice blocks out there. But it's just like a constant sort of reminder in front of the group that, hey, this is what we need to do. This is how we win. This is the type of hockey we need to play.
You're cruising through the first part of the regular season, even though points are put in half for the second part of the regular season, where it's quote unquote only about the seeding, you still regain or still stay in the number one spot. You're heading into the playoffs as the number one seed. And there's this stomach punch in game one against Vienna. Heading into this overtime and heading out of this overtime that you eventually lost, what goes or what comes to mind when thinking about that?
I don't remember the series really well. I just remember being down 1-0, then up 3-1, and then all of a sudden we're in a game seven. So I don't remember a lot of specifics from the series itself. Like, I couldn't tell you a single game score. I think the thing it did was just showed we were in a series, like showed, hey, those first 50 whatever games are, that part's over. And like we could feel great about that part, but if we don't kind of play our best hockey now, it's all for nothing. You know, you're not going to look back and be like, oh wow, what a year. We won the regular season, lost in the first round. Like it's not good enough. So I think, you know, I thought Murph put it well when he said it might be the best thing that happened to us, just in terms of not only having to wake up and get sharp in game two and realize, you know, that this wasn't going to be easy, but then also even them coming back and forcing game seven, like having to grind through that, I think gave our group a better resolve. You know, like anytime you get tested and anytime you come through the other side, you're a more confident group. And you have that much more experience and you're that much ready to face whatever challenge is going to come next. And you know there's always going to be another one in playoffs. Like that's the way playoff hockey works. So I think, you know, obviously over and you're going through it at the time, certainly doesn't feel like a positive. But again, you're just trying to stay focused, like razor focused on what is in front of you.
I like to bring back one game to your memory that you might remember after I'm telling you what happened there, because during that season 11-12, you recorded five shutouts, one of them in the playoffs, one of them against Vienna in game three, a 3-0 affair. Is a shutout always sweet or that much sweeter in the playoffs?
Well, it means you won the game. Like that's really the only part that I'd say is sweet about it. Like it's one of those things, you know, you could not play well and still get a shutout some nights, and you could play really well and you might give up four. So I think one of the things, it's not always that you played well, so you got a shutout. So I think when I look back and analyze each game, and you know, there's some things I probably wanted to do better. But the bottom line is the end result. You know, especially in playoffs, the bottom line is the end result. So you win that game, you know you're up 2-1, on to game four.
I'm asking this question for a specific reason, because there's a huge giveaway. We've not only got the DVD about Linz's 11-12 season that we're giving away in a pod, we've also got a game-worn jersey of Brian Lebler from this year that our colleagues over at Unibet provided. So everybody...
Is it Linz jersey or Salzburg jersey?
It's a Linz jersey. It's all good. Of course, it's a Linz jersey. So people can win either one of those two prizes if they participate. Of course, there's a trivia question in this episode as well. I already mentioned that you recorded 5 shoutouts in the championship winning season with Linz. But the big question is, how many shoutouts during your league era have you recorded in total? Correct answers only to unibethockeyoclock@gmail.com. That's the email address, unibethockeyoclock@gmail.com, and take part in winning either a DVD or the game worn jersey. And that brings me to our friends at Unibet. They have a special offer for all new customers. It's a 400% welcome bonus. Just use the promo code hockey-bonus while putting in 10 euros into your new account for the first time and receive 40 euros for free. That's right, for free. More details, as always, in the show notes of this podcast. Unibet, by players, for players. And Alex, one thing that we kind of skipped a little, and that's so interesting, if you look at the players that are currently played in the Ice Hockey League in Austria and all over the world, it's a different style, it's a different brand of hockey. How do you, as a goaltender, prepare? How did you prepare for the playoffs, knowing that it's a whole different brand of hockey that teams are now playing?
So for me, I'm definitely someone who overthinks things. And I can let my mind spiral, and that's just the way I'm made up. So the regular season, I think you have a certain, you know, it has certain ebbs and flows, streaks where you're playing well, streaks where you feel like you're fighting it a bit. And it has a certain just rhythm to it, right? Like, you know, okay, we're in Graz on Friday, we're home on Sunday against Salzburg, whatever. It just there's that kind of focus, that sort of present moment focus, I think, kind of wanes a bit, at least for me. And that was a certain struggle to just playing well in the regular seasons or trying to find that consistency we talked about. In playoffs, for whatever reason, I found all those challenges just way easier because we're focusing on one team. We know the schedule. We know their players. You can figure out who's playing well, who's really invested, who seems a little checked out. Each series has its own kind of rhythm and storylines to it. And I think I felt just sharper mentally in playoff atmosphere. And I think a lot of that was because it doesn't let your mind wander. You know, and like you're casually kind of watching the other series, see what's going on there. But like your day to day, your minute to minute is solely on one team and one goal. So I think that in terms of, I don't know if that makes sense in terms of like preparation, but that was my mindset going into every single playoff game, every single playoff series throughout my career that I had. And I cherish those moments. Like that's when I felt my best, and that's when I felt like the best version of, you know, just of me as a goalie and me as an athlete. So that's just where I come at playoffs from. But
just take listeners with you, and then obviously myself as well. You're winning that huge game 7 against Vienna on Sunday, March the 4th in 2012. Just 2 days later, quick turnaround, but that's playoffs. You're playing Ljubljana. What happens apart from like a physical rehab process and getting ready and getting the body iced? What happens between those 2 days, between those two series for you? How much video are you looking at? What kind of playmakers are you trying to identify? What are the tiny little things that no one sees that a goaltender has to do?
I mean, I think again, going back, like I think you survived that that Vienna series, and there's a certain confidence that you get from going through something like that. So I think one, it's a little bit, you can kind of take a deep breath because you just bought yourself a little bit more time. I think in terms of the turnaround, I think Ljubljana was a good matchup for us. Not that you're ever overlooking opponent. Like John Hughes is obviously a great player, and he was a great player then, and he was so dangerous. But I think going into that series against them, we liked our team top to bottom in that matchup. And I think if my Lamoureux got hurt, I want to say in that first playoff round, and obviously the career he's had over there, he's incredible, and he was just getting going at that point. And I think that was another, if you were going into it, like we deserved, and I think felt pretty confident. Not that it was easy, not that you look past, but like you feel good going into that matchup. So I think the combination of both getting through Vienna, surviving that, and sort of the exhale reset, and it's like, okay, well, let's do this again. Like, you know, we can still get better. So that's and obviously it does happen quickly, but as you said, like that's playoffs. It always happens quickly.
But is there ever a point, and I know I'm talking to a goaltender who's been taught in his entire life that it's always about the next game and to have the short memory and not to dwell on mistakes for too long. But still, is there a point during a playoff series where you personally think we got him, or is that something that you need to block out to be successful and to play successful hockey?
I think you need to block it out, because I think playoffs are so momentum can, like, it strikes when you least expect it. Like it can change on the most. You know, again, back to that Salzburg series we lost, I'm convinced if we go on and win that game 6-1 or 6-2 instead of 6-4, I think that series plays out differently. Like I can't prove that, but I think as soon as you let up just a tiny bit, as soon as you open the door a tiny bit, you're asking for trouble. And so I think, and that's the challenge of individuals. And I think that's the challenge as a group. And, the more individuals that can stay in the moment, the more player by player, I think teams can keep that focus sharp, the harder they are to beat. And that's just the challenge.
And then again, the funny thing was, last episode had Martin Myrich, featured Martin Myrich, and he said this group had their swagger going on, and it felt that swag the entire year, and especially during the playoffs. Now, where you try to focus on the next game and focus on the little things, did you ever society peak and just had a look at the locker room, and did you feel, did you see that kind of swagger that the guys in the room had?
Yeah, and I think swagger is an interesting word for it. I just thought everyone was a confident group. I thought everyone individually was confident. I thought they were, you know, and that's year, like that's built through the successes we had during the year. If we were a 7 or 8 seed that had to kind of grind and get in, now you might be getting hot at the right time, and there's a certain confidence with that, but I don't think you'd look yourself in the mirror and be like, I've had an awesome year. And I felt going into those playoffs, we had a lot of players who had really, really, really good years. So I think there's just a certain confidence that comes with that. Like you expect to perform instead of, well, no, I can do this job. Like I think it comes to a point where you expect it's going to go well. And that's when teams feel that. I think that's when good teams are really, really dangerous. You know, like there's just an expectation of high execution.
As I've talked to so many of the members of the championship team, and as we've hit a couple of games and especially the playoffs in so much detail. I want to skip most of it as we talked about the Ljubljana series and the Vienna series. And the finals will be talked about in more depth with some of the guests that are still upcoming. Obviously, we now know that Danny Erman is going to be the next one. But apart from that, the first memory that came back to you when I asked you at the beginning of this conversation, and I want to round this out by going back, you said it's that final whistle, it's the clock counting down. How do you remember the immediate aftermath? Do you have specific memories or is it just a blur?
A little bit of both. I think, obviously I was, 35, 36, however old I was. Like I played a lot of years, had never won a championship. So it was a combination of both, like, trying to slow it down in my head and just make sure I remember as much as possible. And then just not being able to do that. I also felt in a weird way, this is probably going to sound really strange, but like, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to act. Like you're obviously hugging guys and you're excited. In those moments, I'm not an overly emotional person. So generally in those moments I get kind of quiet, and like, I just kind of want to take it all in. So like obviously just being overjoyed. I remember Danny handed me the cup. And I thought that was really nice of him to do. Just given how long it had been and, obviously a couple failures along the way, but, I've got, a nice picture of me holding the cup sort of facing the fans. And I obviously look very, really happy, but it's not like I'm screaming. It's not. So I think there's a little bit of that. The other thing, and this is probably an untold story. So obviously the fans come on the ice and that part is just mayhem. And nobody's telling us where to go, what to do. We're just kind of out in the fans. We're taking pictures, signing autographs. Like, and it was awesome. Like it was one of the most, just like from an energy point of view, it just kind of happened. I don't know if the fans knew it was going to happen. I don't know if anyone knew it was going to happen. I don't know if that's generally what does happen, but so that's going on. At some point I realized, I look around and I don't see any of the other players. So I sort of like make my way through and make it back to the locker room. And, our trainer at the time grabs me. He goes, he's like, you have drug testing. You have to get over there. And so like, I hope to God they changed this rule. The fact it was on an elimination game, like it's looking back, like it's funny, but it's also just like, really? Like, what the fuck? Like, so sorry to swear, but so I change and I grab my phone and they bring me over to the room. I think Danny and maybe Bommy were the other two guys that had to do it. And then there are three guys for Klagenfurt. I felt so bad for these guys. Like, these guys just want to get on their bus and head home, right? Like, so we're stuck in this locker room across the way. And obviously you have to, they won't let you out until you pee the amount that you have to pee into the cup. And so we're sitting there and it's kind of awkward. And like, you hear the fans, you hear everything going crazy outside. But so like, I missed the 90% of the locker room celebration. So like, I'm texting my wife's over in the locker room. She's like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, what? Like, but I'm stuck in this little room. And I was the last, I don't know if people who are listening to this have any idea, but like, so you have to pee up to a certain amount. The cardinal rule is like, make sure you can do it the first time. Cause if you only get half of it, it just takes a long time. So by the time, and I was the last person that filled the cup. And so like, by the time I get back over to the locker room, my wife comes down from the VIP area, meets me in the locker room. The locker room's empty. I think Ouellette and his wife, were sort of gathering, but at this point guys are scattered. Some guys are across the street in the viewing party area. Some guys are up in the VIP. And I just looked at my wife and just kind of like, are you serious? Like, I've waited so long for this and now I've missed a ton of it. And there was, one of those little kegs on the table. I go to like fill up a beer. It's empty. I'm like, all right, I'm out. So we get changed or I get changed. And the plan was to meet up at a bar downtown. So I get changed. We go home. I think my wife and I each had a beer and a frozen pizza and just sort of like got into comfortable clothes and we're going to taxi downtown to the bar to meet everyone. So we were the last people to kind of get to the bar, and it was so crowded. So I hop out of the cab and I walk up to the door, and the guy won't let me in. And I'm just like, okay, this is comedy at this point. And I think there was someone standing outside. I don't know if they were smoking or waiting or whatever. And they were just like, oh, he's the goalie or he's on the team. And then they let me in, and whatever, the rest of the night is a ton of fun. And so that's a pretty big memory for me in terms of how that scene on the ice sort of played out after the game.
By far the best story so far. Congratulations on that and bringing back obviously a lot of, I mean, it's an incredible bummer, but in hindsight, I'm happy they can laugh about it. And I'm sure you put a lot of smiles on Linz fans' faces. To round this out, and we've already passed the hour mark, so I know you're a busy man, and I want to let you go, but what's going to remain from this team? How are people going to look back on this team in 20 years, 30 years, 50 years?
I mean, I'm sure you can say this about every championship team. It's just a special group. It's a special group from management to coaches, to players, to staff. It was just a really good group, and it was a constant building from day one to day whatever, that night, game five. And I think the individual commitment, was outstanding. And obviously that drove the kind of the group commitment. So I think I hope that's the legacy of this team. I think that's something we all, we cherished being together, and we cherished kind of building that. And I hope everyone feels that way. I hope everyone involved in it feels that way. And I hope when the fans look back at it, I think the way fans can enjoy a playoff run is so special. Like, to me, that's it was special in Ljubljana, the way there was just like this vibe around the city sort of in that late season into playoffs kind of run. And the same thing the year we lost in Linz, and it was probably magnified even just a little bit more the year we won in Linz. But it just has this, you're going around town, you're going out to lunch. It just has, it feels like it's not that everyone's thinking about it the way we are, but like, it feels present. And that's what's really special about those runs. So I hope the fans can remember that kind of run in a very similar way. Like, you know, they wake up and it's, hey, it's the morning of game five. Here we go. Like, hopefully we can close this. Like, hopefully those memories are sharp in their minds as well.
Couldn't have put it better to finish this conversation. Thank you so much for taking such extensive time for doing this and for bringing back a lot of memories and obviously creating or coming up with the best story so far of anyone on this show. But it's so far. So
yeah, Danny's going to top it, I'm sure. Yeah,
well, that's not an official challenge. Anyhow, thank you so much for doing this. All the best for your day job with the Hershey Bears. Hope to have you back in some capacity on Hockey O'Clock.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Martin. I appreciate it.
Exzellente Unterhaltung mit dem schönsten Sport der Welt.
Unibet Hockey O'Clock.